Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Mahalo for joining us here on The Conversation on this Aloha Friday. Today we're bringing you a show highlighting talented professionals who have spent years mastering their craft. We head up to Waimea Bay and hear from a lifeguard who's been on duty for nearly four decades. We tip our hats to the longest-serving city worker. He was hired in the 1960s at the Department of Motor Vehicles. Hip hip hurrah to customer service and longtime public servant Howard Okamura. We take a spin with a 76-year-old bus driver who's been behind the wheel for 40 years and counting. And we hear from Robert Casimero. A recent exhibit opened at Windward Community College. It pays homage to 50 years of hula with tours and an upcoming concert to help celebrate Casimero's birthday. This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Today, we honoho stories about folks who live in our communities and have had decade-spanning careers. Last fall, the swells kept Hawaii lifeguards busy. Honolulu's Ocean Safety Department reported 25 rescues on the North Shore in a single October Sunday. The Conversation's D.W. Gibson took a trip out there. He spoke with a lifeguard at Waimea Bay to get a better feel about what the job is really like. Carrie Atwood began his career as a lifeguard at Waimea Bay 38 years ago, not far from where he grew up. And for the past 9 years, he served as lieutenant with Ocean Safety. He takes us through a day in the life of a lifeguard.
Careful!
My name is Carrie Atwood, and I am an Ocean Safety lieutenant in District 3 on the North Shore of Oahu. I was only going to do this job for a couple of years until something better came along, you know. I was privileged to grow up in Hawaii. I went to Haliva Elementary School and Wailua High School out here. And I struggled in school, you know. Here I was, this Haole kid that had educated parents. And for some reason, I had a really hard time in school. I wanted to do something that didn't require sitting at a desk or paperwork or that kind of stuff. One day, I decided to cut school, and I came down here to this exact same beach. And it was a big day, and I was body surfing with a couple of my other friends that cut school, and I saw the lifeguards down here. They're having a really busy day, and they were doing rescues. And I was blown away watching them run this beach in this dangerous condition and actually, like, save people's lives. I was 100% convinced that had there not been lifeguards on duty, they would have never made it back to the beach. And I said to myself, wow, now that's something that I can see myself doing. I got into Ocean Safety in 1989. I've been at this about 36 years. It's not that glamorous, you know, to some extent. Shows like Baywatch and whatnot, and the last show that we had, Rescue High Surf, which I thought was done very well. And they did a pretty good job of portraying what we do. I think what a lot of people don't realize that it's not just being on the beach and looking at beautiful girls in bikinis all day. You know, it's a real job where you have a lot of responsibility. You have to have really good social skills. And then another thing that people don't realize is the amount of training that we do. People that are interested in becoming a lifeguard, they have to pass that test to qualify to be a lifeguard. And it's a 1,000-yard run and then a 1,000-yard swim. So you run down the entire length of Ala Moana and you swim back. And it's an ocean swim, you know. It's not like swimming in a pool. And then after that, if you make it past that, then you have a 400-yard rescue board paddle with turns. And we're talking about a pretty sizable rescue board. And then after that, you have like a sprint where it's a 100-yard run and then a 100-yard swim, and then a 100-yard run. And you do all these events back-to-back, and they're all timed. I'm 58 years old. I still have to pass the same physical performance test that I took when I was 20. We don't have a sliding scale where they give you more time the older you get. You got to pass the same time every year. You know, you don't think about it when you're 30 years old and, you know, you feel invincible, but you do this job long enough and it's something that, you know, you're constantly training for. A typical day for a lifeguard, you show up to work, usually it's a little bit slower, and you first thing you do is you're going to assess the situation, you know, assess your dangerous spots or the conditions or knowing what's going to happen. Is the surf coming up? Is the surf coming down? Is it a weekend, a holiday? All those things can play a factor into what kind of day you're going to have. And then it's a lot of interacting with people. And I say this in a way where I don't want to sound negative, but as a North Shore lifeguard in particular, you become very good at profiling people. You just see people that show up at the beach on a day where you know that the conditions are extremely dangerous and they don't fit a certain profile, whether it's the surf shorts they have on, the amount of sunscreen, you know, the equipment that they have. Do they have a Walmart bodyboard? You know, do they have snorkeling fins when they should have body surfing fins? We found out that, you know, being nice and polite and talking to people on a personal level, right, not as somebody who is just enforcing these rules, goes a lot further. And it's a lot easier to connect to people and not try to make somebody feel bad for not knowing what they're getting into. Is it always easy to do? No, but we're really good at that. When you deal with the public, you meet some interesting people. I know the homeless community pretty well. You know, I have a good relationship with them because they see me, they ask me for first aid stuff and, you know, charge their phones, and you really get to know the public. When I started way back when, we had two people here at Waimea, and later on we got three. Back in the day when I worked here with just two guys, you were worried. Your partner would go, you know, on his lunch break and you were sitting down here by yourself. I honestly sometimes look back on that and like, how the hell did I do that? We had one guy started at 8 and he got off at 4:30, and another guy started at 9 and got off at 5:30. So if you were the late guy, you got to spend the hour here by yourself. And that was just super nerve-wracking. You know, you'd just be triple vigilance on guard, you know, making sure that if anything happened, you were going to try to be able to shut it down before it got too out of hand. We didn't have mobile responders. We didn't have ATVs. We didn't have jet skis. You know, we just guarded beach parks. And now ocean safety has grown. We respond to the entire coast of Oahu. Our jet ski program has changed lifeguarding around the world, you know, and that was done by some incredible Hawaiian watermen, Brian Kailana, Terry Ahui, Mark Dombrowski, Mel Poo. You know, we invented the rescue sled that you see attached to our jet skis. The whole world has adopted that. We do have trucks with lights and sirens, and everybody thinks it would be so cool to drive through traffic with lights and sirens on, but after you've done it about three times, it's really nerve-wracking. It's scary almost, because you pull up behind somebody with your lights and sirens, and a lot of times people just slam on the brakes. It's not as fun as you think it would be. We all have those moments where we're frustrated in traffic. I wish I could hit the lights and sirens. But after you've done it a few times, it can be really scary. Because of the changes in all the aquatic sports now, right? We have kiting, we have foiling, we have one-man canoeing. You know, we have all these other ocean activities that people do other than surfing. We have to deal with a lot of that. You know, we have free diving, people have shallow water blackouts. Like, it's as busy as ever. End of a day is, you know, we wind down, and you know, if the conditions are really dangerous and we've stayed overtime, what we do here, especially at Waimea Bay, there's a lot of PA announcements, and we'll really try to sell to the public how dangerous it really is. We'll tell you that lifeguards are going off duty, and should you get into trouble, there's nobody here that's going to save you. We try to paint a picture to somebody or the people who are doubting the conditions of, this is what's going to happen. If you go in the water today, you have a very high, there's a high probability that you're going to get caught in a rip current, you're going to get sucked out, and you might never make it back. There was one day in particular where we were staying overtime. The sun was going down and the surf was coming up. It was on the way up. I remember locking up my storeroom here. We put our equipment away and we locked up our tower. And, you know, we were thinking about, you know, where we were going to buy our post-work six-pack, you know, and kind of unwind from a rough day. And usually you take one last glance out, especially here at Waimea, into the rip current, right? And I remember looking out and seeing what I thought were two coconuts, you know, floating maybe 250 yards offshore in the rip. And I'm like, that's got to be two coconuts that washed out of the river or something, you know? And I grabbed my binos and I looked and we saw two military guys, you know, going out in the rip. And that was one of those moments where I really kind of like doubted myself. You know, it had been a long day and I was like, can I pull this off? You know, can we get these guys? We didn't have all of our rescue units, you know, like we do now, right? We didn't have our jet skis. It was just lifeguards with their fins, their tube, and their rescue board. And luckily, I had some really good partners and we all kind of talked each other into, you know, we can do this, guys. And we were able to swim out there and get these two guys back to the beach in probably 18 to 20 foot surf by that time, in almost in the dark, with just, you know, at twilight. And I remember getting back to the beach and thinking to myself, did we do that? You know, did we just pull that off? You know, and there was nobody on the beach. It was one of those memorable moments where I think every lifeguard has it, where you kind of doubt yourself. By the grace of God, we got that one off. I'm older. I'm still physically fit. I train. I love training. I love getting in the ocean as much as I can. I still feel I'm an asset. When I feel like I'm not, then it'll be time for me to graciously bow out.
That was Carrie Atwood and HPR's D.W. Gibson, who were out at Waimea Bay. The story aired last fall, and we did wonder about the beach's famous Jump Rock. While Atwood said he has definitely seen accidents happen on the Fame Rock, they are rarer than you might expect. The secret to staying safe, Atwood says, as long as each jumper is in a clear frame of mind, no alcohol or other drugs, and dives feet first into the water, the experience should be safe and worth the rush. And we did reach back out to Atwood for an update. He is still making saves in Waimea Bay. He shared that his team recently completed their first ever nighttime big surf rescue. Revisiting top Billboard charts from 60 years ago, hit songs on the radio included We'll Sing in the Sunshine, Pretty Woman, and Doo-Wah-Diddy-Diddy.
There she was, just walking down the street singing Doo-Wah-Diddy-Diddy-Dum-Diddy-Doo, popping her fingers and shuffling her feet singing Doo-Wah-Diddy-Diddy.
Back then, a young Howard Okumura, not too long after graduating from Farrington High School, applied for a job as a clerk typist at the DMV, the Division of Motor Vehicles. The pay was less than $3 an hour, which he thought was a lot of money at the time. He got the job and is still there. Back then, the Honolulu mayor was Neil Blaisdell. In 2024, Mayor Rick Mangiardi honored Okumura to officially thank him for his public service. His office threw a surprise party on his anniversary date. And to throw him off, they told him it was a co-worker's birthday and assigned him his specialty potluck dish, potato mac salad, but made with spaghetti. We sat down with Okumura one afternoon at the Kapalama DMV offices. Okumura had just turned 80 and chuckles that even he can't believe he stayed as long as he did.
And I was thinking, maybe 35 years. But when 35 years came around, no, I didn't go. 40 years came around, I still was there. 50 years came around, I'm still there, and look what happened now. It's 60 years. Time flies. When I first started, it was mostly we type our own document and punch card at the same time, which was, you know, IBM cards. Now it's all computerization. So that's a big change right there already. And now they're trying to put it online so that way you don't have files and all that. The only part is that kind of stuff. If the power goes down, how are you going to get to the files?
And so you were down at the DMV, oh gosh, when it was...
When it was at the old police station on Burton Street.
Pawa, right.
Pawa.
The old Sears.
Yeah, the old Sears building. And that time, the registration wasn't staggered. It was January to December. Then there was a grace period from January to March to renew it. If not after that, it's penalty. And March 31st, we had the last 25,000, mind you, 25,000 didn't register their car yet. And the line on that day, oh, we had lines all zigzagging in the parking lot and we had to straighten out the line. One line was on Yonge Street and the other line went on Britannia and the two line met at Keomoku. Can you imagine how many people that is? And we had to have people going through the line and checking the line and cut the line when maybe about 3:30 so that, you know, we can close it at least by decent time, which we close at 4:30, but then most time we had to close maybe about 5-something.
Not a very efficient way to do business.
And we used to, we had to balance that night and be ready to man the counter the next morning. And one time, March 31st was on a Sunday, and the head of our office told our office, can you come Sunday? So we were thinking about it, and we told them, okay, we come in. And then we came in, we lucky we had 100 on that day. When came Monday, the line was just like any March 31st, was horrendous.
Well, I'm sure this work is, like you say, it's endless, right? It's tedious, yeah. But it's got to be done. It's the kind of thing, if you're a upstanding citizen, you do the right thing and you register your car, you know, when it expires.
To me, they shouldn't have made staggered. They should have maybe moved the expiration to another month, because December 31st and then January to March, that's tax time. So people don't have money to do registration. You tell them, oh, pinch next time, you know, and all that. They should have just moved the deadline and maybe increased the penalty. To have the same manpower 30 years ago, and you know, motor vehicle registration and increase from 30 years ago to now, overtime, they gotta appropriate more money for overtime.
Yeah, because if you aren't increasing your staff, yeah. and your workload is whatever, quadrupled,
yeah.
You know?
And then now they're only holding 20,000. 20,000 will not take care of the backlog and all that. We had backlog, mind you, these past 2 weeks, we had backlog of maybe 10 trays. The trays were about 3 feet long. 10 of them, they didn't have money for pay overtime. You know, something is wrong there, you know.
We've been hearing from Howard Okumura, the city's longest-serving worker. His co-workers affectionately call him Uncle. And Okumura says his co-workers keep him young, and among his favorite memories are the Pauhana gatherings. He spoke highly of a DMV long-serving boss, Dennis Kamimura, who he says used to take the Hawaii Revised Statutes home with him to study. Okumura says Kamimura knew his stuff and was always receptive to new ideas about how to do things better.
His mind was always open. Dennis' mind was always open to new suggestion and whatever. The registration, when we saw some states, they had it barcoded. So when I told him, oh, we should do that barcoding. And when he said barcoding, I said, yeah. Some of the states, they had it barcoded on the document. he said, oh, that's a good idea. So he was open for how to do work.
What is it that you love about this job? I mean, you stuck around for a long time. A lot of people would have, you know, moved around, maybe go to work for the state, go to work for private sector. What is it about public service that made you stay?
Well, as far as the work at our office, I know it's backwards and forward already by now. It doesn't bother me, you know. I just do whatever they tell me, and they don't have to tell me how to do it because I know how to do it already. Yeah, I just buy the time away and just do my work, whatever is assigned.
And then what was it like during COVID? Because the work still had to get done.
Yeah. Well, they had to space our desks and then put the walls in between the desks. They could hardly do anything because they move us in this building here. When we were at the other side on Gateway, it was a bigger building. When they move us here, we had to rent offices next door, which you're paying outside now. Before, everything was with the city.
So as far as the work that you do, so you deal with customers on the phone, you process the registrations, you know, behind the scenes, on the back of the house, right? You've done both.
So a lot of time, you gotta get the information from the individual, just like pulling a teeth. You gotta get it from them before you can tell them exactly what is required.
Anything you don't like to do at this job?
The mail. Because it's a lot of rejects, a lot of the document that they mail it in any old way, you know, and then you got to kind of piece it out. And a lot of other state company like that, they assume that they know, but then they don't know. So we got to kind of educate them. And if they don't give us phone numbers, we got no choice but to send it back to them and tell them this and that and whatever. If they have any question, to call us up and we give them the phone number. Before, when we moved into this building, it was strictly for handicap. They opened it up for regular people. So now when the handicap wanna use, they say it's all full. That's not right, you know, because the federal law says you gotta provide for the handicap.
So you think we can do better?
Yes.
Anything else you wanna share with us?
No, I guess it's just dealing with the public. You know, it's very challenging. It's not the same every day. Some days it's different from the other days, you know.
You think people are more rude these days?
Depend on how you take it. They grumble to you and whatever. So I put them in place. I tell them, why are you taking it out on me? What did I do to you, you know? Then they kind of calm down and whatever.
They just need a vent. But yeah, sometimes they can be inconsiderate and not so nice to city workers.
They say, oh, things weren't coming their way. I said, that happens to everybody, not only you, you know.
Yeah, if you're having a terrible, no good, very bad day, just don't take it out on the city employees.
Yeah, so anybody, you got to change your attitude. It's not me, me, me. You take care of other person, they take care of you.
Okumura also spoke highly of the city's longest-serving mayor. He felt Mayor Frank Fassi really cared for the little guy and had big visions for Oahu. He laments that Fassi never got to be governor. Okumura was hired under Mayor Neil Blaisdell in October of 1964, and his one pet peeve is that employees in the department who register the vehicles for the general public have to stand in line like everyone else to get their paperwork done. No special treatment. When we talked to him in 2024, his supervisor was in her 80s too, and he had no real plans to retire. At that time, Okumura was still driving his trusty Toyota Corolla to work every day and didn't plan on ever getting on rail. And since this story first aired, we did learn that Howard Okumura decided to retire at the end of last year. We wish him congratulations on his next chapter. Thanks for joining us on this Hanaho Show, where we highlight stories of folks whose careers have spanned decades. Stay with us. We'll be right back after a break.
Aloha, I'm Bert Lum. If you're interested in science, technology, and Hawaii's innovation economy, tune in to Bite Marks Cafe on Hawaii Public Radio HPR 1 today at 6:30 p.m.
Support for HPR comes from Scale Staffing, providing offshore staffing and recruitment for audit, finance, and accounting functions. Learn more about services at scalestaffing.co.
Lani Souza began driving a city bus in April of 1985. 40 years later, she's still at it. Over the course of that time, she's watched generations of change across Oahu as she drove one route after another. She also raised 4 children as a single mother. And these days, her shift starts every morning at 3:30 a.m., and it takes her through the streets of Aiea. The Conversation's D.W. Gibson went along for a ride with Souza to hear how her work and perspective has changed over the years.
Please hold on. The bus is departing.
My full name is U'ilani Souza. My bus route is 541-545. I wouldn't believe I would ever become a bus operator. It's a challenge, but that's okay. All these years, I got it already. I'm 76. And that's why some of my coworkers tell me, Auntie, you must just wait to 80, because the way you look, you so kalohi, you can wait to 80. I go, oh, my boy, I don't know about that. Only God knows. We take it one day at a time. I'm a grandmother and a great-grand. I was born here, and I grew up in Kailua. When we moved to Kailua, I was 3 years old. We never had the tunnel now. We came on the Opali Road, that zigzag road, and we never had these kind of cars. We had the old 1940s, those not big vehicles for big families. Because back then, families came huge. And if my dad was here, he would be so proud of me driving one big bus because I'm the only girl. That's why. I wanted to do something different for once. And I thought about applying for the bus company because they was hiring females. And I did. I went down and I applied. I had an interview, I got hired, I went to do my physical, and I started the class the same day. And I was so blessed in one day. And we didn't have too much buses back then, and we didn't have AC buses. So yeah, we had no power steering, no AC, we had the double clutch buses. You know what double clutch is, that's like you're driving one rig, yeah. And if you don't get them into the right RPM, you have to slow down. And you got to crank them to first to start all over again. But back then was wonderful people. Loving aloha on the road, make our blinkers. Or we pulling into our bus stop, make our blinkers pull out, they wave on. That was the best. That was the best. Being a bus operator was something new for me to do. Because I'm ready to challenge anything, to learn anything. And that's me, you know, like my dad said, if you want it, you go for it. Don't say, no, I cannot, because that's what I did. When I was going for my interview, I said to myself, no, I don't think so, I can. Look at me now, 40 years, I'm still here yet. I learned to take care of myself, my health. You know, I exercise, I eat healthy, and I live happy. I don't like issues, I like to be happy every day. So that's the most important thing for me because I'm getting too old for issues. Health is very important, especially in this job. It really can get to you if you let it get to you, but you don't stoop to that level. You know, you just let it go. But when they start doing something that I don't like on my bus, I will find out what is the situation because we have a lot of fights, stabbings, you know, all kinds, even us. We also get assaulted. And we don't come to work to get assaulted. We come to work to make a living. But as for me, I can handle anything out there with kindness, with a smile. People give me a lot of things, even on this line. I get watercress from Subita's farm, you know, he's my regular Filipino guy. He gives me a package of that and aunties, they give me goodies, they give me Big Island cookies, you know, all kinds. I had a lot throughout my years. I had a lot of things, a lot. The people is the one that keeping me going and keeping me smiling. And I look forward every day coming to work because I know my people, especially on this route. Well, we don't only sit behind the wheel. Every day we have challenging every day. We don't know what to expect every day.
Please hold on. The bus is departing.
I just get up in the morning. I say a little prayer. First, I thank you, Jesus, for giving me this another day, you know, breath of life. And I'm ready to challenge whatever going to come about, you know, when I get to work. I love this route so much. I've met so much amazing people, so wonderful. I even get people that don't catch the bus. When they walk in their dogs, they waving at me. I enjoy them, and I'm just so spoiled on this route. A lot of regulars. Yeah. They're so amazing and so wonderful. Every morning when they come on, I always greet them. Sometimes I do have some that's not in a good mood, but I tend to change it, you know, to change their moods and just relax. And, you know, if they have an issue, I'm willing to listen, you know, and hopefully I can help them. And you'd be surprised. I guess they needed somebody to talk to, you know, and I want to listen, you know. And we became close families, you know, on this line. I have so many kapunas. They touch my heart in so many ways. I have young children, yeah. And even if I'm going on vacation, they tell me, no, auntie, we don't want you to go on vacation. When time to go home, I always get in my car and I'm going home. And then sometimes I forget myself, like I'm going home. But then when I see people at the bus stop, I'm pulling in to the bus stop thinking that, oh, excuse me, you know, I'm going home. I'm not working. I have enjoyed each moment every day on this line. It's a good route. It's a relaxing route. You don't need to push. You just go with the flow and just enjoy the scenery. Yeah, it is. This is a good route. And I'll be on it for as long as I can, I want. So it's a cruise route. Yeah. Through the years that I've been driving, I drove so many routes, so many. And out of all of them, this is the one that is my favorite. And this is one of my regular passenger.
Good morning.
Thank you. Hi. Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
I'm
doing fine. Hi. Good morning. When we was growing up, you know, time was just ticking, you know. But now when you're up in age, time is just moving so fast. You know, days is just going, you know. So no more time to think or anything, but just enjoying life. That's it.
Hi. Good morning.
Please hold on.
When I first came in to the company, I was going to training because we have to learn the routes. We have to learn how to maneuver a bus, when to turn, how much to turn. And it wasn't easy, you know, at first, like any other job, you know, when you learn the bus is big and you just got to learn how to maneuver, drive safe.
All right, you have a wonderful day. Bye, Steve.
You too. Well, until we got, you know, I got used to how to drive and to maneuver the bus. And now it's nothing now. You know, I just got to watch my surroundings, my focusing, you know. Because now, today, there's so much cars now out there on the road compared to when I first came in. It wasn't that much cars, wasn't that much people catching the bus. But back then, there was a lot of aloha on the road, as well as the people. Today, it's not. Today is a lot of challenging. You really got to focus. Because why? Because you get people on your bus. And Safety is the number one to me. I don't worry about my schedules. I put safety as my number one because I have people on my bus that I need to get to their destination nice and safe. Today we have so much not well drivers, and we have a lot that cuts us off. And you know, yeah, sure, inside you're kind of mad, but then I don't let it bother me, really. I don't, like I said, my people is more important for their safety than a person cutting me off. I sense when somebody wants to cut in front of me just to make the turn into the lane. When I looked in my mirror, there's nobody in the back of me. When that person can just be patient, yeah, and wait to turn instead of cutting in between us just to get into there where they can cause an accident. So that's why we gotta be ready. Okay, we gotta drive defense out here. And me, it's one thing about me, I do drive defense as much as possible because my people is more important than anything else for their safety. And I want them to be happy, you know, when they get off instead of being frightening, you know. So I won't stoop to anybody's level, you know. I'm just gonna continue to do what I do best, is drive safe. And even though if I'm a few minutes late from my route, you know, that's okay. I'm just going with the flow, you know, because I'm not the only vehicle on the road. So if you get accidents, traffic, backed up, same. Again, I'm going with the flow. When I get there, I'll get there. Yes, we can make our blinkers. We're waiting. We look in the mirror. Nobody let us in. They all speed up. But going to hit the highlights, which I appreciate it. And when I move into the next lane, I give them the shaka sign, which the button is over here, to appreciate. Yeah. And I don't know, you know, really, to tell you the truth, I don't know why people are in a rush. You know, just enjoy life.
All right. You have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That was Uilani Souza talking to HPR's D.W. Gibson about her experience driving for the bus for the past 40 years. Musician Robert Cozumero turns 77 today. We were fortunate to sit down with the composer in Kumuhula in her studios recently. An exhibit paying homage to his 50-year legacy is on view at Gallery Iolani at Windward Community College. Paliku Theater will also play host to an upcoming concert. Cozumero tells the story of the exhibit, beginning with a meeting 1 year ago.
We were called for a meeting down to Windward Community College with Kapulani Landgraf. And we were there in her office area, and she was talking about the gallery itself and then asked if we would be interested in doing an exhibit. Because last year I celebrated teaching hula for 50 years, that I've lived that long is a feat in itself. I was frightened by the thought because, you know, I was thinking of all the work that had to go in it. But my nephew was going to take a class from her, and he's the oldest of my parents' grandsons. And so he and my niece, Skye, and then his younger brother, Martin, took it by the helm and have been in charge of it up until its opening, which made my job so much easier because it's absolutely amazing how they've been able to set up a small area. I say a small area, but to me, it's a nice, accommodating area about my life and the many years that I have lived it and the things that I've done in it. It's just overwhelming. Anyway, to find it meeting its fruition a year later, it blows my mind.
Well, the fact that it was a family affair too, I mean, how meaningful is that for our young people, right? This was something that
they had a passion because it's family.
And it's not like they do it all the time. It's their really first project, and it's done so well. What I find the most interesting about it personally is when I started my career back in 1857, it wasn't for any kind of accolade. I was doing it because, first of all, it was really a lot of fun. And then only later on did you find out the seriousness of what we were going through and what we were creating for what we have now. So when I look at the gallery itself in its preparation and ready for presentation as a whole, I find it difficult to believe that that's me.
Mm.
There's one little area there. It's my corner. On the walls are a lot of the art pieces from my house. And so consequently, my house looks like I'm kind of like have nowhere to live right now because there's nothing on the walls, but it's all there. And it's my little corner there. And when I'm there, and I hope you'll come, I'm finding myself drawn there when nobody else is there. And I have my piano there. Oh, actually, a friend's piano. And I play the piano and I sing, and it's almost like I can hear them talking.
Yeah.
And, you know, the pictures, and that they'll come down and or whatever. I just imagine that everybody's having a really nice opportunity to say hello again. And it's the same kind of feeling that I hope people on this particular plane, when they come and visit it, will have opportunities to talk and to say, I remember that and I was there and I never knew the background behind this particular picture. Who knew that Robert was almost 300 pounds at the time? It's captivating. It's quite captivating.
Yeah, I think as we live things, when you stop and pause and reflect, sometimes, yeah, the power of the universe comes together in that moment.
Yes,
because
yeah.
You just think, wow, the impact.
I believe in that totally. Totally. I mean, I have been very fortunate, I think we both have, in our lives to be pretty much at the right place at the right time or the wrong place at the right time. And to see that displayed before me like that, there's one wall in particular that I call the influencers in my life. And there are like, I think there are 8 of them all together. I still have a hard time going to that wall to see them all prevalently placed before me like that. I said everything that they quoted for each picture. Nona Beamer's there. Of course, Lena Alahaini Kalama, and my teacher, Mikey Ayu Lake, and my parents, and Roland, of course.
Mm, yes.
But it's just I feel more comfortable being farther away because I'm at the piano, and then they're like not necessarily in the distance, but a little away from the piano. And they're being blocked from my vision by people who are enjoying remembering who they are. And then later on when I'm by myself, then I'll just sing to them and they can come talk story with me.
Yeah, I mean, because it's hard, you know, because the people that we love and who have made a mark on our lives, we've lost them. But we just kind of hold fast to that memory.
Yeah, yeah. And be happy that we had those moments. It doesn't make it that much more easy, but there is a kind of relief and, I guess, gratitude in that whole situation. You can't talk like that when you're 20 years old. Now that I'm 757.
Yeah. Well, you do have a birthday coming up.
Yes, you are too good, my darling. Yes, in March.
And there will be concerts that
yes.
are accompanying this
you know,
exhibit?
I've not talked about this publicly, so I'm so happy to be doing it at public radio.
Oh.
It's going to be on March 22nd. It's a Sunday. And it's going to be right next to the Iolani Gallery, which is Palikku Theater.
That's a lovely theater.
I love that theater. It's a bit treacherous if you're an elder because it's very steep. But I love what it offers.
It's an intimate space.
That's the word. It's quite intimate and beautiful. And the theme of it is called a ko'olawau, which means it's like I'm the ko'olaus. And so we're doing everything, songs and stories about the ko'olau on that side of the island. Everywhere from Waimanalo out to Kahuku and Pupukea and stuff like that. It's 2 shows in the afternoon, 1 at 2 o'clock and 1 at 5:30. Because it's so intimate, the capacity isn't as large as you would like it to be. And yet, at the same time, I think it's perfect, especially after coming from the big year last year, celebrating the 50 years. And then I'm going to use the guys in Halau who are from that side of the island to tell a little bit about their stories. And then I'm using them to be like the singers and the dancers in the show and pulling in other friends who are of the ko'olau side of the island.
Yeah. No, we need to have that sense of place.
Yeah, because I'm a townie. Not that it's a bad thing, but I mean, when you're down there in, you know, like Hakipu'u or Kualoa, Ahui Manu, they have their own private kind of pride there about who they are and where they are from. Pick a kid of maybe like about 8 years old who's talking to me and is telling me, pointing out the mountains and telling me the names of all these mountains that I've sort of heard about in chants and stuff like that. But to have it presented in such a way that they're right smack in front of your darn face, mm-hmm. I tell you, that's what we want to do in the concert, to say, you know, you can go and you can research Makiki if you like, and you can find out things that maybe someday in a concert you can share with us. It gets back to that silly adage about the more you think you know, the less you know.
Yeah, and it's so important to share the stories and to get our young people excited with the pride about this wonderful culture and the wonderful place that we live.
Ours is Hawaiian, of course, but, you know, I love the fact that, you know, to me, if you're a local person, you're a local person. And so I don't care whether you're Japanese or if you're Haole or if you're Samoa, it doesn't matter to me. If you can love our land the way we love our land, then come, join, you know. If you get Hawaiian blood, then be grateful. Yeah, so that's what Ako'olau is all about.
Okay. And then I guess as you walk through that gallery and look at those images, I don't know, is there any one particular image that, I don't know, that stays with you?
For me, I find it interesting to remember the moment that the photos were taken. Now, that's not to say I remember all the damn moments because, you know, Utu Bang Bang here can't even begin to try that. But there's one picture of our backyard in Kalihi, and it's a family party. And to see pictures of my brothers and sisters that are gone, of the 12 of us, there are only 3 of us left now. Kanoi, and then my brother Lionel that lives in Waimanalo. His grandson is the surfer, Kekoa Kazumaru. But you can see a lot of them there. My mom is there, and we're all kind of like young kids. And I think if I had to, I would say that that's definitely one of the top 3 pictures. And then there's this long mural-like picture that is the backdrop for a number of costumes that are on mannequins. And I want that mural in my house. I mean, it's a picture of the back of my bald head, and I'm talking to the halau, and they're all in costume. And it's surrealistic in a way, in that we've come this far, and there it is right in front of me. And I mean, the whole thing is just totally unbelievable. I mean, and that's why I find such comfort with my best friend, which is the piano. So when it gets too much for me, I go to the piano. It's always been my safe place for me, and the one that I could share the most emotion with, whether I was happy or I was sad. Because, you know, when you're 7 or 10 years old, do you want to be practicing piano every day? The answer is no. And my mother would make me practice every day before dinner. And my brothers and sisters are outside making fun of me, or my friends, you know, and I'm there practicing my scales. And then, and I love to say this, you know, she says that phrase, which I swear all mothers go to the same school, someday you'll thank me. And meanwhile, this mind of mine is thinking over my dead damn body, I'll tell you. And then today, the gratitude is, you know, overflows.
Mother was right.
Damn it. I tell you, pisses me off.
Well, Robert, thank you so much for sharing
your
manawa today.
Thank you. And I look forward to seeing you.
Absolutely.
At the gallery. And I just want to say to you, first of all, to your radio station, thank you for what you do for all these years. I have been a fan for years. And I've been lucky enough to play that room over there with Roland and come and see other people. And I'm still hoping that while I'm here, someday I'll have that opportunity to come back again.
I hope so too. Come back soon.
Yes. Thank you, dear.
That was musician and kumuhula Robert Kazumaru, who joined us in studio to talk about the exhibit, Ke Kilolani, on view at Windward Community College's Gallery Iolani. It remains on display through May. Robert Kazumaru and Halau Na Kamale o Lili Lehua will perform in concert on March 22nd. Look for links to find out about tours and concerts on our website later today. That does it for today's special showcase. We would like to hear from you. Give us feedback, call our talkback line, and leave us your comments. Here's that number, 808-792-8217. You can also email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. And you can listen back to our shows on the conversation page of our website, hawaiipublicradio.org. And you can find The Conversation as a podcast on Spotify or Apple. Our program is produced by Maddie Bender, Lillian Song, and Kevin Allen, with support from Savannah Harriman-Pote and the HPR Digital team. The Backyard Quiz theme written for us by John DeMello, theme music courtesy of Gypsy 808. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us on Monday. Pick up The Conversation.